All right, so we have a little bit of a different take off the theme from this weekend, and Jason has agreed to give us a talk called Following Paul Around Macedonia. I'm assuming that's what we'll do, so we'll call Jason up now for that. Thank you.
All right, thanks again, Brother Sean. So this is going to be a really kind of a we're done with Jerusalem. We're done traveling for Jerusalem this weekend. What we're going to do now is we're going to follow a different man, and we're going to just really kind of take it easy. We've really kind of hit, I think the study is pretty hard. So I invite you now to kind of just sit back, let lunch digest, and enjoy some photos and some little tours through Paul's trip around Macedonia. In this part of Greece, there's a few regions that we should be familiar with. The first region that we should be familiar with is Asia. So when Paul talks about him going to Asia, it's this region here of Western Turkey, as we know today. There's a region called Thrace up above. He does mention it, of course. And then Achaia and Macedonia are the two that we kind of really hear a lot about on his travels in Acts, and he mentions them in a lot of his letters. And it's these two that we're going to be focusing on. It's this journey around mostly Macedonia. It's that green section up at the top. And then he's going to depart from Macedonia, and he's going to leave Achaia. And from Achaia, he goes back over into Asia, or in Turkey, as we know it today. So we're going to be going through the tours. We're just going to take a look at these two spots. Now, it's really cool because Brother Owen Glover and I, for his senior trip about a year and a half ago or so, at CHC, where I teach, the seniors do some fundraising throughout the year. And they're allowed to kind of pick a trip that they would like to take during their senior year. And it's got to be Bible related. So either it could be a place, they've gone to Israel in the past, it could be a school in a different country. This past year they went to New Zealand for a conference out there. And Brother Owen decided he wanted to go around Greece. So I was a chaperone at the time with him, and it was a wonderful, wonderful trip. So we took off November 14th in 2023, and had a very fun time. And I'm just going to kind of walk you through some of the places we went. We got to a very kind of customized and curated tours that was in the footsteps of Paul. So the tour guides that we had and locations we went to were all expressly having to do with Paul's journey through Macedonia. So we flew over to Zurich and from Zurich down into Athens. And I'm just going to quickly start off by going over the itinerary that we had. We started off in Athens. We drove down into Corinth. Came back into Athens and flew to Thessaloniki. From Thessaloniki, we drove past Virginia and Veria, drove to Philippi and Kavala, and then flew home from Athens. So that was kind of our itinerary, and the only reason I'm explaining that is because we took it totally backwards, right? Paul's itinerary was the opposite, so sometimes you're going to see photos that look like the beginning of a trip, and that's why near the end. Anyway, Paul went from Neapolis. He walked from Neapolis to Philippi. Philippi, he walked to two cities, Amphipolis and Apollonia. Apollonia, from there, he went to Thessalonica. Then he went to Berea. He sails all the way down into Athens, and he walks to Corinth, and he takes the port from Corinth, and he goes back into Asia. So this is, of course, the route we're going to go through this afternoon. We're going to take a look at his trip, Neapolis, Philippi, Amphipolis, Apollonia, Thessalonica, Berea, Athens, and Corinth. But what I would like to do is just kind of give you guys a visual about where these places are. It really kind of helps set the tone, I think, to kind of see these places on a map. So what he does is he takes out of the port of Troas, and he sails to Samothracia. And you can see this in the scriptures, and we'll look at it in a second. He spends the night there, and he continues his route, and he goes to the city of Neapolis. Neapolis is a blink in his travels because he's determined to get over to Philippi. From Philippi, he's going to travel westward, and he's going to get to Amphipolis. Amphipolis, he's there a very short time, to Apollonia, very short time, and he gets over finally to Thessalonica. Thessalonica, he has a little bit of some rough times, so he goes to Berea, and he finds very welcoming members of the believers there. And from Berea, he goes and he sails south all the way down into Athens. From Athens, he spends a little chunk of time there, and he goes finally into Corinth. Corinth is one of the last stops that he has. He takes the port out of Cenchrea, and from Cenchrea, he travels all the way back into Ephesus. Okay, so that's going to be our itinerary today. We're going to take a look at photos from a lot of these places, and the goal is we are going to see that there's still some proof that these places were very much where Paul would have gone to. And we're going to have some fun along the way. So we're going to become a little bit of an archaeology experts. I mean, I'm not even close to one of those, but I picked up like one little cool thing that we're going to share today. All right, so if you turn with me to Acts chapter 16. Acts chapter 16 is where we're going to kick off our journey. And again, we're not going to really read too deep. We're simply going to look at the narrative, and we're going to look at the places, and we're going to see how they are beautifully still tied together in some ways. So Acts 16, verse 9. And a vision appeared to Paul in the night. A man of Macedonia was standing there urging him and saying, come over to Macedonia and help us. And when Paul had seen the vision, immediately it says, we sought to go into Macedonia, concluding that God had called us to preach the gospel there. So Paul has been preaching around, and he keeps hitting these dead ends, starting in the chapter 16. And he gets a vision of a Macedonian man and says, come to Macedonia. So he goes, this must be what we're supposed to do. So we're going to kick off our journey with him departing, and he is going to go from Troas into Macedonia. So, firstly, he's going to start in Troas. What he does is he sails out of Troas, and remember, he's going to stop overnight in Samothrace. So if you look at verse 11, Acts 16:11, so setting sail from Troas, we made a direct voyage to Samothracia, and the following day to Neapolis. So his first stop really is Neapolis. He stopped overnight on a little island. They set sail the next day, and they made it over into Neapolis. Neapolis today has a different name. Neapolis today is called Kavala. In it, Neapolis is a term means new city. In the Middle Ages, Neapolis was renamed into Christopolis, meaning City of Christ, and now it has taken on the name of Kavala. Beautiful little port town. Here's Owen and I. You can see Kavala there in the background. Now, Kavala was a port city. Now, Philippi is his next stop. That's where he's going. But he needs to go to a port city. So how Philippi worked was it was a stronghold built into this mountain. And we're going to spend a lot of time in Philippi, one of my favorites. And in order to get goods in and out of Philippi, one of the main cities in this area, they send everything into the port city of Neapolis, or Kavala. So Kavala here is really just known for simply being a port city. It's built up into this hill. You go over this hill, and you hit that main Roman highway that everybody talks about, and it takes you right into Philippi. Now, again, we'll refer to it as Neapolis, but today it's Kavala. Now, one really, really, really funny thing our tour guide was really sure to point out to us was all over Neapolis, Kavala, there are these signs, and there's two or three of them up in the hills of these cities. Now, the cities have been shuffled around a few times for a few empires, most recently. Let's just get to the point. Most recently, it was occupied by the Turks. The Turks and the Greeks really don't get along. You go to these areas, and they are still just kind of like butting heads in a lot of different ways. Well, in 1922, 25,000 Greek refugees arrived in Kavala in this forced population exchange between Greece and Turkey. The relationship between them is still very, very sour. So much so that in the Greek city of Kavala, the major port city, what sign do you see? What do you see here? What does it sound like? Constantinople, which is Istanbul. What is it called now? If you look at a map. Istanbul. Are you going to see it called Constantinople? Why? When was it called Constantinople? When it was controlled by who? The Greeks. So they're doing is all over this Greek town, they're saying, hey, all the Turks, 460 kilometers is your home. And by the way, it's called Constantinople. All over this place, you're still going to see officially mandated road signs from the government pointing all the Turks. Funniest thing. Anyway. From Neapolis, he travels very, very short, 8 miles, right? Again, it's the port city to Philippi. So he lands in Neapolis, he takes the road, it's less than a day, and he gets into this city of Philippi. Now, Philippi is fascinating. Philippi is still in ruins. What we found in Greece, when we were going to the Corinths and the Philippi's and everything like that, there was a lot of cities, including Thessaloniki, that have just always been cities. So all the ancient stuff that was around in the Romans and the Greek time periods were just demolished or built on top of or ruined and built on top of. And so finding places like Philippi that are in immaculate, so to speak, condition for the old times is truly rare in this area. So the Philippi ruins are one of the coolest places to go to actually see and to kind of get a vision for really what these places were like. So here is just a kind of a map that happens that they show you on the visitor center on your way in. Again, Philippi built into this this hill here, fortress up on the top, as many of these cities have. Where's Noah? No, you went to Athens, yeah? So you're going to see a lot of familiar things in these cities, right? You're going to see up in here these fortresses, sometimes the agoras, things like that. And we're going to get to Athens in a little bit. But here's a rendering of what the city would have looked like. It has all the ancient ingredients for a Roman city. You have here the theater. You have the marketplace or the agora. You have the fortress up at the top. And, of course, the walls surrounding the city. We're going to see these kind of things come up over and over. Now, Philippi is neat because, again, no one's built on top of it. When it was abandoned, it kind of sat there until, over the course of hundreds and maybe thousands of years, it was simply just kind of buried. Now, let's skip the history here and just kind of get right into some of the neat things part of the tour. So let's pick it up in Scripture. It says in verse 11, "So setting sail from Troas, we made a direct voyage to Samothracia and following day to Neapolis, Kavala, the port city. From there to Philippi." And if you were going to get to Philippi, it's the only way you did it. You went through the port city, which is a leading district of Macedonia and a Roman colony. Philippi, big city, important place. Paul starts his trip in Macedonia here. And remember, he has no idea what he's in for. This is uncharted territory. He's coming into the city. He doesn't know if there's tens of believers, zero believers, hundreds of believers. He's not sure. He's going to Macedonia, and he says, where do I start? Well, probably a Roman colony, one of the districts of Macedonia. And so he starts at Philippi. We remained in the city some days. So, just quickly go over some of the things here. This is part of what was the amphitheater. Some cool things we can kind of see here. Here's just a shot. You can kind of see, this is again from the slopes, kind of see the city out there to the right of the photo. Hopefully you guys can see this. I'm not blocking everything here. There's just a shot from up above. I didn't take this one, obviously, but you can see underneath here, this section here is this kind of like tunnel cave thing. What would have happened is these rooms, now obviously kind of abandoned in ruins, were where they would have like held the actors, where they would have held the politicians. They would have kind of entered underneath and gone up in the middle of the stage as they made their entrance. So this is all still, you can kind of still see these things in the really well-preserved Philippi area. Again, you can kind of see in here that hole that you walk into is going to go up into the stage of the theater. Carved into the rocks, we took this picture, are these dome archways, is where they would set their idols in Philippi. So when it talks about him, you know, he's dealing with the idolatry, this would have been one of those like high places that we'd have gone to. And there would have been an idol set up in here, and you would have gathered around it, and you would have worshipped these idols here in Philippi. Parts of the back of the city, an old temple. And of course, we know the story, hopefully, of what happens to Paul in Philippi. He's put in prison there, isn't he? And what they are, it's fascinating, because they are almost positive we've actually found that prison. And this is kind of just what looks like to be a hole in the ground. But what we should do is we should actually read the story in Scripture to see if this makes any sense. So verse 16, if you'll come with me. So verse 16 of Acts 16. "As we were going to the place of prayer, we were met by a slave girl who had a spirit of divination and brought her owners much gain by fortune telling. She followed Paul and us, crying out, 'These men are servants of the Most High God, who proclaim to you the way of salvation.' And this she kept doing for many days. Paul, having become greatly annoyed, turned and said to the spirit, 'I command you in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her.' And it came out that very hour. But, verse 19, when her owners saw that the hope of their gain was gone, seized Paul and Silas and dragged him into the marketplace before the rulers. What they do is they bring him actually into this marketplace. Now, this is clearly a marketplace. This would not have been residential. This would not have been government buildings. This is very much a marketplace, as you can see, these columns around the outside where they would have had the covered walkway, and then the center in the middle. Very common for these Roman colonies to have. Definitely the marketplace. So they drag Paul into here. Now, we're not too far from this prison. Now, what it says is, what is the unique aspect of the prison that Paul's put into? Well, it says, verse 22, the crowd joined in attacking them, and the magistrates tore the garments off them and gave orders to beat them with rods. And when they had inflicted many blows upon them, they threw them into the prison, ordering the jailer to keep them safely. Having received this order, he put them into where? The inner prison, and fastened their feet. So what happens is this jail here used to be much deeper. This is the back wall of what's left of this jail. Everything else has kind of crumbled over time. So what do we assume is that this was the deepest cell actually inside of the prison. So what they do is they've labeled it for you. So if you're ever in Philippi, you can go here and you can see the deepest cell is one of the only things that actually remains in the Philippian jail. It's very, very neat to kind of see this. Now, the other interesting thing our tour guide pointed out, which, take it or leave it, whatever you'd like, but she made it sound so matter-of-fact. I had never heard this before. But what she said was that this girl who's following Paul and is crying out, these men are the servants of the Most High God. She said the girl was crying out, these are servants of Zeus, of Jupiter. The Most High God, the God of gods in the Roman mythology. And that's why Paul gets annoyed day after day after day after day and heals him. I approached her. I said, well, I've always assumed it just to mean that everybody knew she was kind of crazy and he didn't want that. And she was like, that's a really weird interpretation for it. So anyway, take it or leave it, but the Most High God there, she says, this woman is going around saying they're servants of Zeus, which is interesting because what do they call Paul and Silas later? Well, they call them these same gods, Jupiter and Mercury. All right, little archaeology lesson. This is always fun. See these pillars here? We're going to learn a little bit, so you guys will be able to spot pretty quickly, Roman era and Greek era archaeology. So these pillars here, you're going to see two kinds. You're going to see these pillars here and this what's left of this column or pillar here. What's the difference? What do you guys see? Yeah, so you guys see the grooves built into these pillars. These are Greek pillars, in contrast to these Roman-era pillars. Greek pillars were built very much as show. And you can see this, right? The Greeks were all about the presentation of it. Rome was growing so fast, they didn't have time for these kinds of things, and they said, any pillar works, straight up and down, build it, let's move on. So when you kind of are traveling through some of these areas, you're going to be able to see, well, was this built in the Greek era, or was it built later on in Rome, massive expansion, period. Now again, this isn't a 100% of the time rule, but an overall theme of a lot of these areas is, you're going to be able to pick out, and we'll have some quizzes as we go through, and you're going to pick out and say, I can tell what era that's from. Another thing about the Greeks is that they actually started carving the top of these pillars, and you go, oh yeah, that's the top of the pillar, I've seen this 100 times. And you probably have. But they're actually made of the acanthus leaf. The acanthus leaf is very common in Greece. And you'll find it carved into the top of all of these Greek pillars at the time. And it's a little bit of the beginning of the Roman era as well. But it symbolizes immortality or this enduring life. And so what they're doing is they're putting these on the top of all their Greek and some of the Roman pillars saying, everything in here is going to be around forever. The acanthus leaf. Now, the interesting thing is that this has not changed at all. We go to today's terms, and we see the same exact thing. This is St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. Acanthus leaves, still at the top. This is the U.S. Capitol building. Acanthus leaves. What are the pillars based off of, Greek or Roman? Greek. Why does the U.S. base so many things off of Greek architecture? What's the... What's the one we've all heard?
Yeah, right? Democracy. U.S. born out of the democratic ideologies. So we take all of our architecture influence from Greek. You got the acanthus leaves at the top of the U.S. Capitol building and the very Greek pillars. Anyway, that's beside the point. We'll see a few more of those as we go up. But if we're going to zoom kind of out, you guys see still Philippi here? So Philippi is this ruins section here. And you can kind of get an idea about this hill in the background if you can work with topography. But what we also notice is there's an area here where, does anybody remember, when Paul gets to the city, where does he find worshipers? Where does he find believers in Philippi? Yeah, that's right, he finds it by the river. Implying there probably wasn't a what in Philippi. Yeah, a synagogue, right? Because that's always where Paul went first. The synagogue, you always go there. But he doesn't find any synagogues, so he has to find the believers, so he goes to the river. Now, the sections we've looked at so far, this is that marketplace. Remember that big flat area with the columns that surround it? That's the marketplace. This is where the jail was. So when they drag him into the marketplace, the height of the jail is really close. Right? This is not a big city. So it was up near where all the other government's buildings were. And finally, this is where the river that runs next to Philippi is. So it's this line here that he's going to walk out to see. And there's a lot of things that have kind of been built up around this river. It's a beautiful area. And who does he meet here? Yeah, right? He meets the house of Lydia. Again, a beautiful area. There's a pretty modern church built there, and a beautiful mosaic on the floor as you enter the church was all these places that Paul went in Macedonia. It's a pretty cool mosaic. So let's read the story of Lydia very quickly because I love this one. Verse 13 of Acts 16. And on the Sabbath day, we went outside the gate, to the riverside where we supposed there was a place of prayer. And we sat down and spoke to the women who had come together. One who heard us was a woman named Lydia from the city of Thyatira, a seller of purple goods, who was a worshiper of God. The Lord opened her heart to pay attention to what was said by Paul, and she was baptized and her household as well. Now what she does is she says at the end of verse 15, if you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come to my house and stay. And she prevailed upon us. So this woman Lydia, who Paul meets there at the river, was from where? Thyatira, right? So she wasn't necessarily based in the city of Philippi. It says she was from Thyatira. Now whether that means she used to be from there or actively from there, we're not told. But what we are told is that, what we do know from history is that this area of Thyatira was known for all of those shells that you make the purple dye from. So what she probably did is she probably went home to Thyatira, she gathered up her supplies, and she would come into Philippi and sell her goods. She'd have to go through, of course, Neapolis, Kavala, go into Philippi. Now, right beside the marketplace in Philippi were these lines of shops. I'm going to tell you about them in a second here. These lines of shops were unique because, again, here's our marketplace. You recognize it? Jail's right up here. What we're looking at is this line of walls. Okay, this is those shops here. Marketplace, columns, storefront. This is prime real estate. You are right on the back side of the main center square on your way into and out of the city before you get to all the residential areas in the background. And it's right against the forum. Now these shops, if you kind of walked around the city, which we had the opportunity to do, these shops are like 2 to 3 times bigger than all the other shops in the city. Now it's fascinating because this is what they consider, what they assume, were like the luxury shops. Your Giorgio Armani's, your Louis Vuitton's of the day. This is where the prime real estate was. So who probably had their shop in one of these stalls here? It probably would have been Lydia, who's selling one of the finest of things in the time. Does she have money? She has money. She tells Paul and her and the visitors, come and stay with us. And they say, no, thanks. And she prevailed upon us. So Lydia actually invites Paul and part of the believers back then into her house. So she's wealthy, she's a business owner, and she sells one of the most highly valued items at the time. So we get to walk past these, and you just think, Lydia probably sold something here. And it's amazing to see all of this stuff right there in front of you. All right, from Philippi, what we did is, what Paul did is he travels over to Thessalonica. It's about 80 miles. This would have taken a few days to get over into Thessalonica. But he didn't have a terrible time in Philippi. There was some success in Philippi. And he makes his move over into Thessalonica. Okay. If you catch it in Acts 17, verse 1. Now, when they had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica. So we are given basically a word and a half for the visits to these two cities, Amphipolis and Apollonia. For us, it was almost the same length. We drove past, and the tour guide's like, oh, by the way, that's Amphipolis. It's a little village. You can kind of see a few roofs tucked into a hill. 2 minutes later, oh, that's Apollonia, right? So what has happened is those cities were just built on top of what was there before, and they're positive that if they wiped everyone's houses out and dug, they'd find stuff, but you obviously can't. So those villages, Apollonia and Amphipolis, still around, but just built on in modern-day terms. Thessaloniki, as is known today, beautiful city. Beautiful modern-day city. Hardly any excavations. Thessaloniki has been one of those cities that has been passed down from emperor to emperor. They've all loved it, so they all set it up as their capital one time or another and just kind of flattened everything, built on top. Flattened it, built on top. So it takes a lot of work and a lot of red tape to get anything excavated here. Now, we know a few things that happened in the city, Thessalonica. There's a few verses, which is great. We get Acts 17, verses 1 through 9. So here's a picture of just some of the ancient walls. These are around after Paul's time. So these are newer than Paul, but about the same place that the walls would have always been. And here's a shot from up at the top of the city. They drove us to the top of the mountain. You can see now the landscape of the massive city of Thessalonica, or Thessaloniki as it's called now. And the ancient walls is from about where we are. There was some walls like right around where we are here, and they go out to this point here. So the city is incredibly big, even back then. Nowadays, it extends 2 to 3 times more than that. So let's read the story of Thessalonica real quick and see if we can get a glimpse as to why that's important. Now, when they had passed, verse 1, through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where there was a synagogue of the Jews. And Paul went in, of course, as was his custom. And on 3 Sabbath days, he reasoned with them from scriptures, explaining and proving that it was necessary for the Christ to suffer and to rise from the dead. Verse 4. And some of them were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas, as did a great many of the devout Greeks, and not a few of the leading women. But the Jews, verse 5, the Jews were jealous, and taking some wicked men of the rabble, they formed a mob and set the city in an uproar and attacked the house of Jason. So when it says that they set the city in an uproar, this wasn't a little village tucked into a mountain somewhere. This is a massive city. And what the Jews are doing is the Jews are going through and they're saying, hey, have you heard what this guy's doing? Oh, that's terrible. Yeah, we're marching around the streets about it. It's awful. And so this whole city now, full of people, is angry. And what they do is they bang on the house of Jason. They bang on his door and they say, where's Paul? Now, we'll get to his story in a little bit, but Thessalonica, as I mentioned, the ruins of Thessalonica are fairly rare. But they're moving a bus station in 1962. They decided to move this bus station from one place to another. So they tear it down, they're digging to kind of do some excavation of the bus station and stuff like that, and they clink, hit something hard. What? That's weird. But everything, there's tons of stuff down here. So they start digging, and it just so happens that they actually uncover a forum from the Roman era. We have the same ingredients, don't we? Can you guys see some of the same ingredients? We have our Roman pillar. We have the amphitheater here. We have these rooms where you walk into, and the actors or the officials can walk into, and they can be led up. So we have all the same ingredients here in the Thessalonica city. Again, everything else is just covered. All these buildings in the background, these high-rise buildings, there's stuff underneath them, but they just obviously can't dig them up. You can't kick thousands and thousands of people out of their homes just to do some digging. Anyway, Thessaloniki was great. Wonderful food in Thessaloniki. Loved a lot of parts about it. Sunsets were beautiful. Got to sit on kind of the seawall that they have. Very, very calm, very peaceful. Lovely, lovely little town. If you ever have the opportunity to get over there, Thessaloniki is worth spending a day or two in. Tons of stuff and a lot of history you can still see there. But at the top of the city, near where I took that photo of kind of the spanning city, the big city, there's this interesting monastery. This monastery has been passed around. I mean, you can see from this picture here how many different cultures have gotten a hold of this and kind of added their own things onto it. I mean, the bricks here are thousands of years old. They got some archways that are hundreds and things like that. Anyway, this monastery has been passed around for time and time again. But tradition has it. This is a really kind of the region where Jason's house would have been. Now, again, you're listening to this, you're like, oh, of course it is. It's the only thing that has a government building on it. But that's beside the point. It fits geographically around where the same area would have been. Because they go up to Jason's house, they knock on his door, they don't find Paul, and Paul has slipped out of the city. Paul has left. And so Paul's not going to walk through the main gates or the side gates. He actually hops over, and he's traveling out to Berea. So on the walls, right outside the city, this monastery is really kind of tucked in against it, where we assume Jason's house would have been near. And he does escape from this area. Again, could have been the house of Jason. Chances are no. So from Thessalonica, does anybody know where he goes next? Berea, very good. Berea was one of his favorites. He finds really no people kind of pushing against him. Of course, we know people from Thessalonica end up chasing him. But it's kind of a little hike, 40 miles, and he's going to make it into Berea. Berea is another one tucked up against in a mountain, as many of these villages were. Beautiful, really, really nice small town. Hasn't grown to the size of your Thessalonikis and things like that. Not even the size of Kavala, but very, very nice. It's called Veria now. Very, very similar name. It's called Veria, and very, very little excavation. Like many places, the new city just sits on everything else that's old. But Veria, or Berea, holds tons and tons of pride in being the first city that actually accepts Paul's teachings. So you go to the city of Veria today, and they have this monument and this plaza all dedicated to Paul, the Apostle Paul. And there's his statue there. You can see some mosaics on the side, and then a big picture mosaic right here in the middle of the Apostle Paul. And they still hold pride in the fact that Berea accepted the teachings of the Apostle Paul. And what we notice, really, is that all these towns and villages that we visited, they all have something that they're proud of about their relationship to Paul. Like, I mean, a couple of them are like, well, if there's nothing we can find, some there isn't. But like Athens, very, very proud that Paul didn't get kicked out of Athens. So you walk around, you're doing a tour of Paul? Did you know that the people of Athens never kicked him out? Like, yeah, it's like the 80th time I've heard that today. Right? But Veria, their claim to fame for Paul is, we listened to his teachings. And again, they only know that because of verses 10 to 15. Now, while in Veria, just kind of a little detour from the footsteps of Paul, there's a Jewish quarter in Veria. Very, very, very depressing to see these things. Cute little town, but many, many of the homes in this Jewish quarter totally abandoned, falling apart, beams just hanging in the living rooms. In 43, when the Germans invaded Greece, they came into Veria. They removed all the Jews from the Jewish quarter, from the city. And basically, they were all of them killed. Out of the thousands that lived there, 123 survived to come back into Veria. But when they came there, they had found their homes exactly like this. I mean, really no change since the 40s. They had been occupied, everything in their houses stolen. Some of their houses burned down or lived in by others. So really, the Jewish quarter, the Jewish people there moved back to Israel, moved to other places, maybe Thessaloniki, a lot of them to the U.S. But the Jewish community never really has come back at full strength. But that being said, they actually have a fairly new synagogue in the area for any visiting Jews who were coming into Veria. So it was cool to kind of just get to see that a place where Paul went and he visited a synagogue, they've rebuilt a synagogue in Berea, one of the cities that loved to hear Paul's teachings. So everybody in the old synagogue would come and be like, yeah, tell us more, tell us more. And it's a city that actually has kind of rebuilt it despite their lack of Jewish population. But when the Germans did come in, what they did is they actually locked 300 Jews in this building for days while they were waiting to get transported into Auschwitz. No food, no water, no bathrooms, anything like that. And the Jews, just 300 Jews locked in the building. Many of them did die. And those who didn't then, they died when they arrived in Auschwitz. Again, fairly sad to see, but Verri didn't hold much else more than that. Now, we do know that the believers in Berea they did cling to the teachings of Paul. But why did Paul get kicked out of Berea? You remember the story? The Jews from Thessalonica, they go, yeah, we got him out of our city. And then they get word that he's in Berea. So what do the Jews in Thessalonica do? They hop on their horses, and they ride into Berea. They do the same damage in Berea. And so Paul has to escape, and he has to leave Berea as well. So what he does is he hops on a boat, and he gets on at the port, and he sails many, many miles, 200 miles, down into Athens. You know, we can spend an entire, really, evening, weekend, looking at all the amazing things in Athens. Athens is a archaeology hub. But we will spend just a few minutes as we really try to figure out what Athens has in store for Paul. Because Athens was awesome. Athens was awesome, right? Noah's shaking. Has anybody else here been to Athens? Okay. Good. McFarland's staff. It's worth checking out if you're ever even in the area. Athens is great. And you'll see a couple reasons why. So here's Owen in Athens. It's still called Athens. Here's also Owen in Athens. We had some mediocre sushi in Athens. Again, our budgets weren't massive. We saw a $1 sign next to a sushi place and said, this is it. And it was worth $1 sign. Anyway, here is Owen at the top of the Acropolis. A lot of things you guys will recognize, right? You guys have seen pictures of these things, I'm sure. This is the Acropolis. This is the building called the Parthenon. The Acropolis is the mountaintop. This particular temple is called the Parthenon, built in 447 B.C., was that around during Paul's day? 447 BC was built. You better believe it. It looks a lot more like this, though. This is the Parthenon. Who built it? Can you tell from the pillars? Yeah, it's a very Greek-focused building, and you're going to really kind of see this influence. Now, you see at the top up here, did you get to the Acropolis Museum at all? So at the top up here, you have this... scene, really, of all the Greek gods. Right in the middle, of course, was Zeus, the god of gods. And on the side here was all these images portraying the gods in their various battles and things like that. But you have this triangular piece up at the top portraying the Greek gods. Well, interestingly enough, oh, again, of course, Greek pillars. This is the National Archive building in Washington, D.C. What is it resembling? Yeah, it's the Parthenon, isn't it? You have here, I didn't do a lot of research to find out who these guys are up here, but it's the same shape, Greek pillars, acanthal leaves, Greek pillars, all these kind of things. It's the same thing. This is a different building. This is the Supreme Court building, built in 1935. Here's Capitol columns in the DC Arboretum. Again, acanthal leaves. You recognize this one? It's the White House. Again, acanthal leaves, columns. Anthony is the White House. Hall of Columns directly underneath the House of Representatives. Greek influence. The Lincoln Memorial. Very Greek influence. And again, as I've already seen, the Capitol building also in D.C. So we've looked kind of at the reason why that the U.S. has pulled so much influence from the Greeks. It's their love of democracy, the birthplace of it. So when the U.S. nation was kind of getting their feet off the ground, democracy at the front and center of the governing bodies, and they said, well, this really needs to be reflected in our buildings. There's another reason we'll get to in a little bit. But up at the top of the Acropolis, remember, Acropolis, mountain, Parthenon, temple with the triangle thing. At the top of this, our tour guide walks right past this thing. It's a cannon. And says, oh, yeah, that's a... I go, what is this? And she says, oh, that's one of the new cannons. I go, that's a new cannon? And she says, yeah, that's like from 15th century. I go, if this was in the U.S., it would have its own museum. And it's sitting in the open next to the trash, basically. I was blown. I mean, some people here come probably from countries with a lot of old history. I don't. And this blew my mind. This is something 2,000 years old. I mean, blew me away. Anyway, we were just walking around Athens, and there's this kind of hole that's been dug out. It's doing some minor excavation, and it's just sitting there. I mean, thousands of years old. Quick quiz. Columns, what era? Good. Roman era. Very good. So you guys are getting the hang of this. So that's newer than the Greeks. So may have been around during Paul, maybe not. Okay, now, while we're going around Athens, this was the temple of Zeus. And you can see in the background, can't you? You can see in the background here, the Acropolis with the Parthenon up at the top. This is the temple of Zeus, built in 456 BC. Thumbs up around during Paul's day, thumbs down no. Thumbs, 456 BC. Yeah, thumbs are way up. Good. Jason, that's a stupid question. I'm not putting my thumb up. Good. Definitely around during Paul's day. Here's just it for scale. You can kind of see some people here. This guy over here. One of the columns knocked over, I think, during the earthquake. Another interesting thing about the Greeks, the way they built their pillars, was they would build them in blocks like this. Now, the geometry involved in needing to be able to assemble a column that looks as perfect as this. Well, maybe looked way more perfect before. But as perfect as this, and knowing that it was built in these blocks, the geometry and the math involved would have been as outstanding. So anyway, that's the Temple of Zeus, the big dog. As they're up on top of the Acropolis, there's a temple to Athena, 420 BC, around during Paul's day. You can see the Parthenon and the Acropolis in the background. You guys all see it? That's that hill back there. Did you have a chance to walk through the Agora? Terrific. You will now. At the foot of the Parthenon, there was this agora. Now, the agora is the public marketplace area, a massive section. And you can see all of the ruins. I mean, they go everywhere up on these hills in these ruins. This is a cool story, and this is where I spent a little bit of time talking about this area. As soon as you step in, you're kind of greeted with these massive, massive pillars with these idols and gods carved right into them. So I want you guys to just get a good kind of burn this picture in your brain real quick. These here are torsos and heads and sometimes legs of these idols. All right, so you guys get that? And see how big people are? You guys see that? So these are the people. Now, this is what the building used to look like. You guys see the same torsos? Look at that again. So here is a torso, and here's what the building used to look like. I mean, three times as tall as that. That's your entrance into the agora, the marketplace. A grand, grand area inside of Greece. Again, in the shadow of the Parthenon. In the Acropolis. What a city this would have been. Athens would have been amazing to go to. And as you're walking around this agora, here's another shot of it. You guys, of course, can see in the background the Acropolis and the Parthenon. This is a temple to Apollo Patrus, the temple and altar of Ares. The temple of the Athena Nike, Apollo Zoster. The temple of Poseidon. Not all of these are in the Agora, but they're in the general region. The temple of Poseidon, again, names of Greek gods we've heard of. The temple of Hephaestus. This is also in the Agora. This one's in immaculate shape, all things considered. Looking at the rest of the Agora, this one here is in really, really good condition. So you can kind of get up pretty close to this. You can really see the layers of the columns, and you can really kind of see the archaeology and the architecture of a lot of these buildings. So all these temples in the Agora, in the marketplace, and up on these mountains. And that little mountain, of course, has its own temple to that god. And this one's got its temple to its god. But right next to the Acropolis, that's this mountaintop here, was what was known as the Areopagus. And we're starting to get maybe a little bit of a familiar sound to some of these words. Come with me, if you're not already, in Acts 17. Let's get the story of Paul in Athens. This blows my mind. Acts 17, he flees Berea because the Thessalonican Jews have found him. He sails into Athens. Verse 16. Now, while Paul was waiting for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him when he saw the city was full of what? Idols. Do you guys get that flavor from Athens? Yes. How many temples did we see to different? That's what's left after thousands of years. Poseidon, Ares, Nike, Zeus, Hephaestus. All these guys, all these idols still have temples, let alone what's been ruined. And Paul gets there and his spirit's provoked within him. He goes, this city's given up to idols. Verse 17, so he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the devout persons and in the marketplace. That's the agora we were just in. It's where you would go if you're going to reason with these guys. You'd go to the marketplace and you would say, you go to this temple and you'd say, where's your priests? All right, let's hash it out. What makes you think your God's right? Okay, what makes you think your God's right? In the marketplace, you'd meet up with these people. You meet up with the priests, whatever it was. Verse 18, some of the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers, who we've heard about recently, also conversed with him. And some said, what does this babbler wish to say? Others said, well, he seems to be a preacher of foreign divinities, because he was preaching Jesus and the resurrection. And they took him and brought him to the Areopagus. They took him and brought him to this place. At the foot, all this section to the left of the picture, that's the marketplace. You wind your way up this hill, and you make it to the Areopagus. How did they pronounce it? Areopagus, I think is what it was. I was like, I don't know what that word is. She goes, this is your Bible. I'm like, that word's not in my Bible. Oh, the totally botched English version, Areopagus? Yeah, yeah, I know that one. So let's keep going. Other says he seems to be a preacher of foreign divinities, verse 19, and they took him and brought him to the Areopagus saying, may we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting, for you bring some strange things to our ears. We wish to know, therefore, what these things mean. Now, all the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there would spend their time in nothing except what? Telling or hearing something new. That's our day and age, isn't it? Oh, you have something new to tell me? Perfect. I'm all ears. Oh, you know what? That sounds good. I'll believe that now. So when Paul gets to Athens, and by the way, did anybody figure out why the Athenians didn't kick Paul out? Why didn't the Athenians kick Paul out? They didn't care. Oh, cool. That's what you believe? Great, man. That's awesome. Everyone else was like, no, no, no. That goes against our belief. Remove him. The Athenians are like, that's new and pretty cool. You believe what you want, man. So that's why Athenians hold such pride, is because they were just purely, we don't care. Verse 22. So Paul, standing in the midst of the Areopagus, he's on trial. He's standing in the middle of the Areopagus. We know it as Mars Hill, right? That's where he's at. Mars Hill. This is his scene. Obviously, it's been really worn down. Paved mountaintop is what it used to look like. And you could see the city of Athens down below. And you could see the temple of Hephaestus there in the Agora. And this is that abandoned marketplace, the Agora. That's the one where the big entrance with the torso guy is there. All right. So he's standing there, and this is the view of his audience. This is the view of his audience. Let's read the story. Men of Athens. Verse 22, either follow along or take a look at the picture. I perceive that in every way you are very religious. For as I passed along, I observed the objects of your worship. As I was walking through the marketplace, I found also an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God. What therefore you worship as unknown, this I proclaim to you. The God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man. And what are they staring at? What's right behind Paul when he's speaking these words? The most beautiful temple made by hands. The temple, the Parthenon. Sitting atop the Acropolis. And he says, this God who you don't know about doesn't live in temples made with hands. He doesn't live in that one. 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 He doesn't live in that one, that one, that one, that one, or that one. where does he live? Nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God, perhaps feel their way toward him and find him. And so as he is saying this, the temples made with hands, the city had the most impressive temples that existed in that time. And they knew them all. They worshipped at this one. They ate food sacrifice idols in this one. It was an astonishing time. And again, here's just a view of that ruins of the agora, the marketplace. You can see the torsos that we entered right over here. And so as he's wandering around, and they drag him through this up on top of the Areopagus, he's being led, and he goes, there's another one, and he can't keep it in. He gets to the top, and he says, look, this is how it is. I gotta throw this one in. In case you haven't noticed, Owen loved eating. Athens was one of our first stops. Remember I told you we went backwards? Athens was one of our first stops, and this was Owen's first taste of an authentic gyro. And man, did this guy put those euros away while we were there. He loved $4, and he was like, I couldn't be any happier. Anyway, it was great. So from Athens, he leaves of his own accord. He's not kicked out again, and he travels to Corinth about 50 miles. We'll have to blast through Corinth. We only have a couple minutes left. But Corinth is today called Corinthos. Does anybody know how long he spends in Corinth? 18 months. 18 months in Corinth. It's a long time for him, for Paul to spend in one area. But we will see a couple reasons why. Now, the city of Corinth, unlike a lot of the cities, it wasn't actually built on top of. It's kind of like think of it like a snail. It's kind of just moved. So the outskirts would become the inside and those, so on and so forth. So Corinthos is still a city, but it's many, many miles from where the old ruins are. So we had the opportunity to kind of see, much like Philippi, a lot of the old ruins. Now, Greece is not really rolling in the money, so a lot of the excavations take a long time or a lot of private endeavors, and so they're very slow to do a lot of excavation in Greece, even though it's all over. So a lot of these things are kind of still underground. But we see in Corinth a lot of the same temples. What do you see on this stone here? Yeah, you see the menorah, right? This would have been at the synagogue there in Corinth. We know that Corinth did have a synagogue. And you can see here the last letters of the word Gog and then H-E-B, Hebrew, the Hebrew synagogue. Some cool stuff you get to see there in Corinth. Again, we'll have a blast through some of these. But this is this region in Corinth that would have been more like the city square. All right, there's one of the areas at the shopping center here where you'd go and you'd kind of do some shopping. You'd also, here was where you would eat those meat that was sacrificed to idols that Corinth dealt with. They would be cooked and they would be delivered into these restaurants that would be eaten here. Acts 18, we're not going to go there for sake of time, but Acts 18, Paul is brought to the judgment area in Corinth. And it's Gallio, right, who's there with him. And it was here that Gallio would hear the people's complaints against Paul. And so Gallio and Paul actually stood right up here. And you can't really see the perspective, but I climbed up there where Owen and the tour guide were. And I took this shot, and you can kind of see the elevation difference down there with the people. But this is where they would stand, and Gallio made his case and made his plea with Paul standing right there. And this is where the audience, they would be listening to the audience there. Now, this was really, really cool. By the way, what's the mountain in the background? Acro-Corinth. What did Corinth have that was a really big deal and a really big problem to the ecclesia that was up on the mountain of Acro-Corinth? It was the temple of Aphrodite, right? It was a temple where all of the priestesses would come, and they would come into the city. A big deal, a big problem for the ecclesia that Paul had to deal with. Yet, he spends 18 months there. Fascinating, isn't it? Now, this is really, really cool. All right, I want to look at a couple more verses with you guys before we can kind of close our Bibles for the rest of the time. But the sign reads, And it goes on a little bit past this picture, but the sign reads, Erastus, in return for his Roman magistrate position, laid the pavement at his own expense. Really, Erastus was the one who paid for the street in return for the city really giving him his job. Now, it's not certain, but wouldn't this be cool? Come with me, if you would, to, let's go with Romans 16 first. Romans chapter 16. Last chapter in the book of Romans, he mentions a man named Erastus. Romans 16, verse 23. Gaius, who is host to me and to the whole ecclesia, greets you. Erastus, the city treasurer, and our brother Quartus greet you. So Paul knew somebody who was named Erastus, who was the treasurer of the city. He was a government employee of some city. Acts 19, verse 22. You don't have to turn this one up, I'll read it. And having sent into Macedonia two of his helpers, Timothy and Erastus, a helper of his, he himself stayed in Asia for a while. Last verse I'll read for you is 2 Timothy 4, verse 20. Again, concluding verses of Timothy. Erastus remained at Corinth, and I left Trophimus, who was ill, at Miletus. So Paul had a helper, a good friend named Erastus. This man, Erastus, lived in Corinth. This man was the treasurer for the city. Wouldn't it be neat if this Erastus here is the same guy? And you can kind of make out the name Erastus on something. But wouldn't it be cool if this was the same guy? Erastus, living in this city of Corinth, the treasurer of the city, given a job by the city that involves some money, wealthy man, and he goes, thank you for my job, I'll build this main road that would have used to be right here through the city of Corinth. Again, can't be dogmatic, can't be sure, but man, that would be neat. The clues seem to be almost there. All right, so quickly going through the last few slides here. Acrocorinth in the background, massive, massive temple up at the top that used to be there. Not much there anymore, but that's where the priestesses would come down into the city of Corinth. But why would Paul, the question we have to end with is, why would Paul spend 18 months here? Why would Paul spend 18 months in a city really in the shadow here of this evil, wicked place of worship? Well, there's a few reasons which he, I think, spends time. First of which, Jesus came to heal the sick. So you probably are going to have a lot of success where people are the sickest or where there's the most need for support. So he goes, I can't spend just a month here. This place needs a lot more work. Maybe that's the reason. Corinth is right here. It's a city of two ports. Again, port on the south, port on the north. It's also made up of this isthmus here. Now, back in the day, there was what was known as the Pan-Hellenic Games. Olympics, we know of those, right? We just had those Olympic Games. Those occur every 4 years, and they were over there in Olympia. The Pythian Games in Delphi every 4 years. Now, every 2 years were what were known as the Isthmian Games, and these are still a big deal over in this area of Corinth. So it would be rotation. Every year there would be games. Olympic, Isthmian, Pythian, Isthmian, Olympics, so on and so forth. So there'd be every year, there'd be some sort of games, and they'd rotate through Greece. Now, the Isthmian Games happened to be inside of Corinth. So, Corinth is on Isthmus. It's a port city. Everybody comes there. Now, what was the occupation of Paul? He was a tent maker, right? It would be a great job to have, is to be the tent maker in a city in which people come from across the country. Once the hotel rooms are booked up, where do people stay? Well, they're going to probably stay in some tents, which is probably also why Aquila and Priscilla also found a home in Corinth. When Paul gets there, there's already two believers who just so happen to be tent makers in the city. And he goes, this is perfect. So one reason, people there really need the help. Two, he finds people who have the same career as he does. Three, it's a port city. If you're a business owner, you want to be where you can ship and get goods. Four, he probably made some good money to be able to afford the rest of his trip, because we know that from Corinth, he actually leaves the area of Macedonia. All right, again, you can't be dogmatic, you can't be sure, but a lot of these things kind of start to make sense when you actually put yourself in the, he was a real man. He had to make some money in order to afford some of these things. Okay, so imagine the Isthmian Games are done. He sells all his goods. Aquila, Priscilla, Paul leave. They all do. After 18 months of Paul being there. All right, so what he does is he travels from Corinth, and these are the hills of Corinth here, and he goes just an easy 5 miles, and he goes to the place called Cenchrea. Now, just like Philippi has its port city of Kavala, Neapolis, Corinth has its port city of Cenchrea. Nowadays, it's called Kekres, and there's some ruins still left here in Kekres, Greece. It was really the lifeline port of Corinth. Again, it had two. This was that one, I think up the north, less than 5 miles from Corinth. One of the main ports in the Corinth area. It used to extend all the way here. They still found ruins, a part of the port over in this area here. And there was a small fort. They found some ruins up at the top of this little hill. So this little bay here would have been parts of the ruins. Some pillars there in the water. Of course, the port has been destroyed. And it's actually kind of it sunk and the water's risen to a difference of about 8 total feet since the time of Paul, they assume. But again, they've done some excavation here recently and found some things in pretty good condition. Here's kind of the walkway, a part of the port. And you can kind of see some of the remnants of the columns that would have supported the piers that go out. What happens in Cenchrea? One thing happens to Paul. Does anybody know? Anybody remember? I didn't remember it. What does he do in Cenchrea? This is a hint. Yeah. He cuts his hair. He shaves, doesn't he? Because of the vow that he had. So somewhere in Cenchrea, there was a barbershop. He stops by. He leaves. That's really the only thing that happens in Cenchrea. He gets a haircut, and he travels back home via Ephesus. Now, in Ephesus, he's going to contend with riots again, brought on by Demetrius the silversmith of Artemis, and doesn't have a great time in Ephesus. But does anybody know where he's determined to get to? Jerusalem, and then Rome. Jerusalem, right? He's got to get to Jerusalem. He's got to bring message that this gospel, it's been preached to the Gentiles. And he's going to get there, and he goes, okay, yeah, now I got to go die in Rome. But it's interesting because he gets to Ephesus, and he goes, okay, let's go and report back to our journey. All right, anyway, that's Paul's time and Jason Owen's time in Macedonia. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And thank you guys for a terrific weekend.